Listen. Do you hear that? It's hard to find silence anymore, and maybe looking for it on the radio is not really the best place. Hi, I'm Rick Steves. Today on Travel with Rick Steves, we're meeting one of today's most respected travel writers. Pico Iyer joins us in just a moment to help us enjoy the quiet places of our world and to feel at home, even in the silence of being an outsider when we travel. Later in the hour, travel writer Will Hyde joins us from his home base in London to suggest we take a closer look at one of his favorite haunts, Cape Town in South Africa. It's a relatively painless flight from Europe, has plenty of easily accessible outdoor adventure options, and offers comfortable weather all year long, even in July. That's the depth of their southern hemisphere winter. But let's start by meeting Pico Iyer. His books and frequent articles in prominent magazines and newspapers have long inspired us to find meaning in our travels and to examine the world both around and within us. Pico was born in Britain to Indian immigrant parents, and as a youth, he traveled between home in California and school in England. His books include Video Night in Kathmandu, Falling Off the Map, and his most recent one pays tribute to the late English author Graham Greene. It's called The Man Within My Head. Pico lives with his wife and children in rural Japan, but right now he joins us in our studio to chat about the quiet places in our travels. Pico, thanks for joining us.
Very happy to be here, Rick.
If you were to sum up The Man Within My Head, your latest work, is it a travel book, and what's the gist of it?
I think you could say it's about chapter two of travel. So it's about Graham Greene, the late English novelist, and I think anyone who travels quickly finds that you feel as if you're walking through a Graham Greene novel when you're in Saigon or Havana or many of the great cities in the world. And when I say chapter two, I suppose I mean that the first aspect of travel is wonder and discovery and excitement at the freshness of a place. The second is that you're walking down the street in almost any city in the world, but especially in the underdeveloped world, and somebody comes up to you and is very kind and invites you to his house and shows you around, and all these doors fly open that would otherwise be closed. And then at the end of the evening, he says, well, is there any way you can help me get to America? And what do you do with that? He's been so kind to you. What is the kind thing to do to him back, as it were? And I'm always interested in how travel brings us up against these moral and emotional, sometimes psychological challenges that we can sleepwalk past at home. So this book is partly about those aspects of travel, the questions it brings up that we'll never be able to answer.
And a lot of people in their travels probably choose not to go there. They don't want to deal with those questions.
Yes, but the questions come into your hotel room even.
But they come into you, yeah. I mean, I've got this shot of me with a bunch of kids in Sri Lanka reaching their hands into my window to beg in my car. And I'm driving and I've got six hands coming in the window. And that, it's symbolic of trying to gain empathy and connect and understand it connects you with the truth on this planet.
Yes, and we so often travel in order to get something, but often we should be traveling also to give something. And it's an understandable impulse on their part. You know, if a millionaire was suddenly to come to my house, I'd be normal human being. But a part of me would also think, oh, well, he's in a big position. He might be able to offer me something.
So it's something worth thinking about.
Yes.
I love this phrase in the book, I'm not rooted in a place so much as in certain values and affiliations and friendships that I carry everywhere I go. My home is both visible and portable. Does travel let your home be more than a conventional place that you have a mortgage on?
Yes. I think, as you were saying, because I grew up with Indian blood and an English voice and then an American residence, I grew up with the sense of home being in the home is on the road for me. Home is in the passage of movement. It's in the spaces between places. And I think what's interesting now is that so many kids in this country and elsewhere are in that same state, and that home has less and less to do with a piece of soil and more with a piece of soul in some ways. That if we were to go to the local campus here or local high school and talk to the kids, I bet many of them would say, oh, my parents are from Ethiopia, but my girlfriend's from Vietnam, and my dream is to go to Costa Rica. And they will create their home as a patchwork of the many places that are a part of their lives.
Well, plus their family is split up, and they're living weekends with their dad, and they're going down to the other town with their mom. And yes. Where is my home? Do you have a home? Are you an orphan, or can you find home still?
Exactly. And I think you have to create a home within yourself because, as you say, it won't come to you externally.
Everybody is ethnocentric, I think, to a certain degree. A lot of people don't have the blessing of having a multi-continental, multi-ethnic kind of upbringing like you. How are you ethnocentric?
I'm locked within my own prejudices. And for example, I'll often tell people about the wonders of travel and they'll say, well, we can find it all in our hometowns. And they're right, because I think one of the happy developments nowadays is that if you want to see Ethiopia and Vietnam and Iran, just drive across the street in Seattle or New York or Toronto. So we don't have to actually go to the far corners.
If you want to go to church, you can just tune in to Reverend So-and-so on Channel 42.
Yes, you know? Exactly. The world has come right into our homes now in that
sense. Now, you've recently met the Dalai Lama?
Yes, actually, I've known him since I was a kid, and he was the subject of my last book called The Open Road. And he's a very interesting traveler because, as you know, he spends most of his life on the road.
Yeah.
And what I notice is that whenever he goes to a place, his first question is, what can I give to it? Like almost a doctor traveling around in rural areas, seeing how he can help people. And secondly, what can I learn from this place? And what often strikes me about him is that although he's probably the world's most prominent Buddhist, he goes around the world and tells people, please don't become a Buddhist. Stay within your own traditions. There's no need for you to do the same as me. And then even says recently, it's not important that you have a religion. The most important thing is a sense of kindness and responsibility, and that every human needs and can gain from. And that's actually something I explore in this book, The Man Within My Head, because Graham Greene famously never really became a believer in any religion. But he always thought that what you do in terms of kindness is much more important than what you believe. And I suppose I've been interested in that idea.
I know you live in Japan now. In my travels, I'm always impressed by how religion, or if not religion, spirituality sort of permeates a place. It permeates the art, the culture, the history, the hang-ups, everything. And do you find some places are more spiritual than other? And if a place is less spiritual, do you find there's a hunger and a willingness to embrace goofy cults and that kind of thing?
Yes, I think places are like people, and some, especially the older cultures of the world, tend to be very evolved. They've been thinking about these essential issues, as Japan or Ethiopia has for thousands of years. And places like California, where I spend a lot of time, are obviously young and more rootless and probably hungry for the wisdom that older cultures have to offer. And I think that also speaks to one of my truths about travel, which is that a place doesn't have to be pleasant to be interesting. And recently I've been spending a lot of time in Jerusalem, and I would say it's not beautiful, comfortable, peaceful, or even friendly, but it's incredibly fascinating. And it's like a man in a torn overcoat standing on a street corner, ranting and raving, but ranting and raving so fascinatingly that you can't stop listening. Yeah. So I just want to keep going back there again and again. So I don't even know if Jerusalem is spiritual or not, but it's got a lot of religion and a lot of humanness, and they're constantly colliding.
And a lot of edge, yes. And if you are a certain traveler, you want to get close to the action.
Close to the edge,
yes. Close to the edge. Pico Iyer is our guest right now on Travel with Rick Steves. He's one of the most sought-after travel writers of our time, and we're glad his travels brought him to our home studio near Seattle. Pico's website is picoiyerjourneys.com, and his name is spelled P-I-C-O-I-Y-E-R. Much like our conversation, his website includes thoughtful observations on places and people that he groups into the outer world and the inner world. For instance, he puts Cuba in the outer world, and he calls it the most beautiful riddle on the planet. His essays on Japan center on the power of the unseen, and he calls Canada the forgotten home of global imagination and conscience. He writes about his friend, the Dalai Lama, about Somerset Maugham, Leonard Cohen, and the English traveler and author Graham Greene, who's also the subject of Pico's latest book called The Man Within My Head. I like contrast in travel. I remember as a young tour guide, I used to inflict a horrible hotel on my tour members just so they'd appreciate a good hotel the next night. Not a very clever idea in retrospect, but I really like the contrast. When you look at the robe of Mary on Michelangelo's Pieta, it's very rough, and it makes the flesh of Jesus' body very believable and soft. You see, not that it's soft, but in the contrast, the juxtaposition with the robe, as I think Michelangelo intended. I read your Condé Nast article about Koya-san.
Yes.
And I thought of what a beautiful place. I mean, very special for Buddhists there.
Yes.
But it's, it's sort of a side trip from Osaka, which would be quite a contrast, I imagine.
Yes. Well, and Japan, as you know, is the spiritual home of contrasts because Kyoto has 2,000 temples in it, but more high-rises than Detroit, and it's a city of 1.5 million people.
One minute I'm in a Zen garden, and the next minute I'm in an 8-story-tall disco where every floor has different kinds of noise. I mean, it was just amazing in Japan, the contrast.
Yes.
When I'm in Italy, I go to Milano, and that's just high power. And then 1 hour north, you got Lake Como, which is honeymoon country, and everybody's in a very romantic mood, I think because, in part, because of the contrast.
Yes. And not everybody is lucky enough to be able to travel as much as I am, but I remember a few years ago I was in Venice, and that same week I went to Alaska, and that's a perfect example. And each was rich and fascinating in itself, but even better to see the last word in terms of history and culture and urban civilization, Venice, pushed right against the last word in nature and expansiveness and silence, as in Alaska. And I got a lot from the dialogue between them as well as the individual places.
You know, that silence you mentioned is such an underrated aspect of travel.
Mm.
And you mentioned the 17th century French philosopher Pascal, who wrote, "All of man's problems come from his inability to sit quietly in a room alone." What a great notion. If people could just sit and enjoy the moment, it would be a little bit easier to share this planet, it seems like.
Yes, and I think that's intensifying and accelerating. And I think more and more people travel now just to get away from their cell phone or from their laptop.
Well, you mentioned that the future of travel lies in black hole resorts.
Mm.
What do you mean by that?
For example, a hotel in Big Sur, California, that charges $2,265 a night so that you don't have a TV in your room. And more of them are realizing that what people most want on holiday is freedom from their habits as well as their homes and the chance to be unplugged, to be at last out of radio contact. Nobody from the office can get to them. And, well, that's one reason I stay in a monastery a lot.
I think you proposed an internet Sabbath.
Yes, I have journalist friends who, from Friday night to Monday morning, never go online, partly to recover those ancient traditions known as family conversation and dinners. And they have a teenage son, but both of them realize that otherwise the three of them are all with their iPhones or whatever,
yeah,
clicking away.
Oh, I mean, you know how the kids are these days. We go up to the cabin, they come back, and bam, they're online immediately. Our daughter Jackie spent a month in Morocco in a village with no computer, no internet, no TV, no phones. And it was for her, it was like detox, you know. It was just very necessary and much appreciated, at least after the fact, sort of thing. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Pico Iyer. Pico's new book is The Man Within My Head. More with Pico Iyer and your calls in just a moment. Our number is 877-333-7425. Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. Tips about traveling in Europe and information about the EU are available at euintheus.org.